Niners, Bears fans, this is Bears Barroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and with me today are the masterminds behind Bears Hour Live, a podcast and YouTube video series, Lauren Cox and Phil Atoshin, also known as Draft Dr. Phil. How you doing, fellas?
Doing good. Doing good, Aldo. How you doing?
Good. Lauren, you just had a birthday, so are you no longer a virgin?
No comment.
And Phil, here we are. We're taping on a Tuesday night at about 7:15 Central Time. It's been about 8 hours since Mrs. Jay Cutler posted a picture of her husband's naked butt on social media. So I must ask you, how many times have you ejaculated today? I know I ejaculated at least 2 or 3 times.
I guess Jay's letting it all hang out.
He is. And you know what? It wasn't his naked butt that made me feel this way, but I have been feeling a little bit wistful about the fact that he is no longer a Chicago Bear and that his tenure here is always going to be marked by disappointment, despite the fact that he holds virtually every Chicago Bears passing record, despite the fact that he never had a full team around him. Despite the fact that he had poor coaching around him for most of his stay here, it just really bugs me that things didn't work out for Jay Cutler and that the dream that was Jay Cutler when he first arrived here just didn't happen. Phil, I know
Hello?
You. Phil, I know you. it's Jose.
Is that the Gandhi phone?
It is. Phil, I know you feel the same way, that you wish things would have ended differently for Jay, right?
You know, we could joke about it, and I'm usually the brunt of the joke. So. But, you know, a zebra doesn't change its stripes, and the reality for me of Jay Cutler will be one with which I will never forget. He is what I deem the most polarizing figure in Chicago sports history, I believe, based on how, you know, great of an athlete he is and was on the football field, to how he was treated on and off of it by his peers, by fans, and by the media especially. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. And, you know, a lot of things haven't worked out in Chicago. And unfortunately for Jay Cutler, the stigma will be attached to him, and the narrative for those hogs on the mic like Stephen A. Smith and others, Mike Wilbon, they'll end up winning. And that's unfortunate in the eyes of America. But for me, as an avid tape studier and quarterback guru, I know what this guy meant to the Chicago Bears. I think teammates and players on the team have come out and spoke for him. And I'm not talking about the spiteful, angry player. I'm talking about guys that have no reason now to say anything positive, but are. And he'll be remembered as one tough son of a bitch who got behind center and played his ass off for the Chicago Bears. Let's just be honest. The guy was a warrior. He will always be that way. And despite the statistical records and everything, I just really admired the way he strapped it on and took to Sundays.
That's one of the things that really bugs me about Chicago Bears fans who have been so critical of Jay, is the fact that he laid it all out there. I mean, this guy was so effing courageous. The way he would put his head down to pick up the extra yard when he had to run with the ball. The way he would take hits in the pocket, holding the ball to his blame sometimes too long, but he would do it with the intention of trying to win a fucking football game for us Chicago Bears fans. And yet, so many of our fans unfortunately spit on what he did for this team. Lauren, I just want to get your thoughts on Jay Cutler before we move on to our outline here for the rest of the show. He was basically the quarterback for most of your life watching the Bears, correct?
Yeah, I'm a youngin, that's for sure. when Jay came in 2009, I was, 15 years old? So, I mean, it's been a very Jay Cutler-centric fandom for me. I got a few years of Rex Grossman and all that, but much. I didn't watch a lot of football before then, and it's been a lot of Jay. But I really like what Adam Gase said today about Jay Cutler. He was asked about him down at the league's meeting, the league meetings in Arizona. He said, you know, I see a guy that worked hard and did everything he could to try and help the team win, sacrifice his body. To me, he was an athletic quarterback that could throw the ball, and when you've got third down, you could call the worst play possible, and he was going to get you a conversion. He made a lot of the things we did look really good, and I think that's a very fitting description of what he was in Chicago from a guy that obviously has the perfect perspective to be able to give that sort of an evaluation of him.
I mean, that's just perfectly said, and I wish, you know, that instead of John Fox, it would have been Adam Gase that would have been hired as the Bears head coach. I think that we would have not been picking third in this draft. We would have been probably picking in the 20s because we would have been a playoff contender or close to a playoff contender, and Jay Cutler would be returning for another year of football. But that's the way the cookie crumbles. Let's talk about Bears Hour Live. I wanted to have you guys on to talk about your show because it is, I think, a really special show in the library of shows that are out there for Bears fans. You guys have a live podcast and a YouTube video web series that complements what's going on in the podcast, but also adds a visual touch with your excellent analysis of players. Let's start a little bit with what happened in the last show. You had on from Pro Football Focus, Josh Liskowitz. Is that how you pronounce his name, Lauren? Liskowitz.
Yes.
Excellent. I did. I got it.
Got it right.
Woohoo! And so you guys had a really excellent discussion about the safeties in this draft. And Josh and Phil had a little bit of a disagreement on who perhaps would fit best for the Bears. Phil, let me turn to you first. What's your assessment now on that Bears safety position, given all of the analysis that you've done on it, the talk that you had with Josh, your own film study and so forth? Where do you see the Bears tackling this need at safety that they've had for a long time now?
Now, it's definitely a position with which, much like the quarterback position in Chicago, that they continue to swing at and miss. They throw bodies at it. I've gone on a rant on Twitter 2 years ago listing all the names, and Lauren adds names as I go because there's so many names that have played the position that it gets to the point where it's recycling cans. You know, you can't even remember when you drank it. So looking at this position in this draft, I know there's 2-3 safeties that get this draft flowing, blood flowing, energy going. And I know me and Lauren were off the air earlier, didn't know we were going to talk about this tonight, just continuing to battle at this position with Jamal Adams. I am a Malik Hooker guy.
Spin that on third down, jump ball deflected, and what an interception! Malik Hooker with a spectacular interception on the sideline!
I just think it's hard to identify a guy that can be athletic at the hash and take away the football. You know, dynamic playmakers in the takeaway department, you think of Ed Reed, you think of that guy coming off the hash, recognizing the play, diagnosing it, and getting over there and catching and attacking, high pointing the football. Those types of skills are hard to come by, and when you find them, it doesn't matter which round, if you find that kind of football player that's able to have range but also awareness to the football, then you have something special. With Adams, he's an alpha dog in the house. I know you're a big fan of him too, Aldo.
Yes, I am.
It's not a knock against the kid. I just look at what I have in Adrian Amos, and I feel as though that strong safety position is very much overlooked because he was covering a lot of the duties for other people and the rotation of Vic Fangio. What you're asking this scheme to do is find that football player that's able to play the free safety. And I think Amos is more of a strong safety. So I'm just not the belief system in the draft, if you will, not going to change the subject. Mm-hmm. When you're that high, I believe you take pass rushers, offensive linemen, dynamic playmakers on the offensive side of the football. That's how I – so if I find a pass rusher, which I can at three, I believe, that I'm going to lean towards a generational talent, what I believe to be a generational talent, if I'm not drafting a quarterback.
Now, don't give
for
us
–
Phil, don't give
me,
us
– I won't go anywhere. I won't.
I was going to say, don't give us a name because Phil and I are going to do our own mock draft podcast. So I don't want him to give away who he's thinking that might go to number three for the Bears. Go ahead, Phil. Excuse me for interrupting.
No, I knew to hold. I didn't want to have a spoiler here.
Thank you.
But I want to make sure that those positions are met first. I feel as though at one hand, I'm arguing against myself. And I'll be the first to admit it because we've seen the Bears tackle the safety position in the third round, the second round. So if you have this player rated highly, then you take him. And when I look at what Ryan Pace likes in a Floyd and a Kevin White, and then I turn my attention on the defensive side of the football and I look at Malik Hooker, I just feel like if I was in his brain, that's the kind of football player. And I got to give credit to fellow colleague at the barroom, Shane Marsoff, for our conversation on it, because he really sold me on Pace doing this. And I agree with him. That's how I see this football player being immensely talented, only starting to play football his junior year of high school, to where he is now being talked about as the top, if not the top safety, then the second safety in this entire draft, and a top 10 athlete safety in this draft. Think about where he's going to be 2 years from now when he's been in the NFL. And then I look at the fit in the system, and I feel as though what Vic Fangio needs is a guy that's going to take away the football. I mean, that's really why Demps is here. If you follow Pace's language, the first thing he points out, well, he was able to take, he had six interceptions or eight interceptions last year for the Texans. This is what their focus is on, turning over the football, especially when you're going to have an offense led by Mike Glennon, short fields, dynamic takeaways on defense and special teams, hint, hint, Jabril Peppers, that kind of stuff is going to be looked at heavily in this draft to shorten the field for that offense, Aldo. So I just look at these safeties. I have Hooker first, Adams second, then Jabril Peppers in there. And I think Peppers is a real wild card here. Me and Lauren, yes, Aldo, are going to go into the tape. Lauren stands on one side. I stand on the other side. Rocky and Apollo. And really, I just think if Peppers had been placed in one position, a la Brian Urlacher, when he finally was put at middle linebacker, the essence of all the traits and all the innate ability that he had was able to rise to the top. With Jabril Peppers, as a football coach, as a scout, and looking at this player, he's a free safety in the NFL that could play corner, that could come down and play nickel in a pinch. The same thing Josh Liskowitz was talking about Adams. Mm-hmm. Peppers can do it and is 10 times the athlete that Adams is. So when I look at the athletic chart and those kind of things, and you know I don't use that much, Aldo, I'm always about the tape. So when I look at that chart and his narrative when it comes to all those tests, and then I look at the tape, I mean, check all the boxes, put this guy in one position, and you're looking at a dynamic football player. Are they going to take that chance at three? I don't know, but I think Lauren Cox, shout out to him at Bears Hour Live, brought up, where would you draft Devin Hester? Because this football player, Peppers, not only is a great tackler, maybe the best tackler in this draft, he is a great dynamic punt and kick returner and can change field position and the game in a minute. And if Bear fans have forgotten, part of the reason why you were even in the Super Bowl, not even part of, half of the reason you got there is because of Devin Hester, who I believe is a Hall of Famer. So Jabril Peppers, I'm given huge company with, but I really believe that this kid is that dynamic of a punt returner as well as a top flight defensive back.
Lauren, one of the things that guys like you and Phil have to do when you're studying the tape is also project. It's not just about what you see, but also applying what you see to the scheme that the Bears run, to the NFL game, etc. Given what you've seen on tape of the safeties and how you project these safeties playing in the NFL and for the Bears, who are your top three players? We heard Phil's top three. He's got Hooker, Adams, and Peppers, 1, 2, 3. Have you given any thought to who your top three are that could potentially fit well for the Chicago Bears?
When you talk about projection and for these players, I think that's where you see a lot of the main differences between draft analysts and even specifically Phil and I's rankings on players. Like, I am a big fan of Jabril Peppers, but I wouldn't have him as my third overall safety because I think Phil projects him and has more confidence in his projection of Peppers growing at a position that he hasn't necessarily played a ton of the way Michigan moved him around over and over. He showed that the skills to be able to do a lot of different things. And I think Phil is more confident in his ability to improve and sit down at one position and really thrive at that role than I am. So Peppers doesn't fall in my top three of the safeties. I put Jamal Adams number one overall. I'm just so confident in absolutely everything he does. I think he can do he can play the back end. He can be the deep safety when you need him to. He can come up in the box and deliver a hit. He's a sure thing tackler every single time. He's got ball skills. He can cover the slot. I think he just does everything so well. He's sort of the safe, you know, Pro Bowl caliber player. And with Malik Hooker, I like the upside and I like a lot of what he offers as a rangy free safety, but I just get so concerned with his ability to wrap up. I mean, he has the right mentality. He's aggressive. He goes after players when he's coming down the lane, but he leaves his feet a lot. He doesn't wrap up. And I know these are all coachable traits, but when you're putting him next to Jamal Adams, I just don't see the flaws with Adams. Maybe he's not quite the elite athlete that Hooker can be, and perhaps that's what limits his ceiling a little bit. But what separates them is just how solid Adams is. And it's not as though it's this huge distinction between the two. Like, Hooker is way, way, way down. It's just if I have to pick one over the other, it's Adams for me by, you know, a little margin. And Hooker is certainly a top safety prospect. And then for me, I put Obi Melifonwu with third overall because I just get so excited about his physical traits. And that again comes back to the projection. And he's like a bigger Jabril Peppers in that same sort of, I mean, not in what they've shown on tape, but in that sort of, I see a freak athlete and I want to sit him at one position and let him thrive there. And I think he's got range. He's got great coverage ability one-on-one or on the deep end. He's got ball skills. He can tackle pretty well too. And there's just so much you can do with a guy that's just physically imposing and bigger and faster than everybody else. He can cover tight ends one-on-one. He can really kind of be that jack of all trades on the back end. I get really excited about a guy like Obi Melifonwu.
He's got space out on the perimeter. He'll fire to the end zone. And for the second time tonight, in the end zone, it's Melifonwu with an interception. The two mistakes tonight have come near the goal line, and they've both gone into the hands of one of the better safeties that you're going to see in college football right now.
You know, I'm glad that you brought up the name because while I can't pronounce it, I am super psyched about this guy too. If the Bears went outside of safety and elected to choose a pass rusher with that first pick and Melifonwu was in that second round, you got to snatch this guy. This guy, I never even heard of the guy prior to the postseason bowl games and so forth. And I was just floored by this guy's talent and what he did at the combine. It's unbelievable. Now, I asked Jose Cotto for his top three safeties, and he's got Adams, Hooker, but he also had Budda Baker at number three, who is somebody that Josh Liskowitz on your Bears Hour Live podcast was not a huge fan.
I have some real concerns about how he translates to the next level. He plays with his hair on fire. There's no question about that. But I think ultimately with his size, I have issues with him in coverage in every facet. I don't think he's nearly as instinctive when he's off the ball. I think he's a beat slow in transition. He doesn't show the same level of athleticism when he's moving in space, even though he has good straight line speed. Doesn't show anywhere near the same all-around athleticism that you get from Peppers, Evans, Hooker, Melifonwu, Adams.
Lauren, tell me a little bit about what your feelings are about Baker, and maybe when we get you together with Jose, we can discuss that topic.
Yeah, Baker, he's a guy we talked about as the comp for him on the podcast as a Tyrann Mathieu type. I mean, he's a little bit smaller and sort of that box safety that can come down and cover the slot. I'm not quite as low on him as Josh was, but I'm also not, you know, in love with him. I don't dislike him as a prospect, but he's just kind of – he fits in that one of those guys group. I mean, I think he's a late first, early second round kind of prospect. He's aggressive, and, you know, you like to see that, but you wonder if he's just over-aggressive and how well you can kind of tone that down. You can – you know, and obviously that there's a lot of flaws for every player, and then you project being able to sort of tone – I mean, actually do tone that down and get him on the right path. But, you know, I like the way he attacks blockers and the way he sort of gets up to the line of scrimmage and isn't afraid to get his nose in there and really just kind of get knocked around, even though he's only, what, a 5'10", 190-ish range. But – at the same time, sometimes he doesn't, like Hooker, he gets off his feet when he's tackling and he doesn't square up and doesn't bring the guy down. And you'd like to see a smaller, aggressive guy like that really finish properly when he gets to the ball carrier. And I just don't know, you know, when he's on the back end, when he's asked to do more of the deep role, I think he's limited to more of a boxer, a box kind of safety, just because he can kind of get off balance and give up some plays and be out of position when he's asked to cover deep. And it's sort of like a lesser concern as Jamal Adams, or some people don't feel like he has the speed and the range to be able to play that. I don't have any issues with that, but I think Baker is just another step lower on that. And it's, I don't know, to me that those kind of limitations keep him in that late first, early second round range. He's not, by any means, he's not going to be a bad player. And I like him as a, I think he probably would fall right around the 5 or 6 mark in my safety rankings. But I, you know, he's got, there's a lot to like, and when you're picking those 5, 6 guys, you're nitpicking different parts of their game. And I don't want to come off as too negative about Baker, because I think Josh did a decent job of doing that on the podcast. And I know Phil's a little bit heavier on him, so I'll let him talk him up a little bit more. But there's just some things to be concerned about with his game as well.
Well, and it's funny because on Twitter tonight, I asked people to post some questions for you guys, and it's almost become an episode of Bears Hour Live as we've got a bunch of tweets coming in here. I'm going to begin with a question that Jose Cotto sent me in a DM, because it's a little wordy here. So I'm going to read it and direct it to Phil. Jose wants you to convince him that a player who is not a great tackler, and he's obviously, I think he's referring to Jabril Peppers, and in fact he is, convince me that a player who is not a great tackler and has shown deficiencies in coverage in much smaller zones at linebacker than he'll cover at safety will be an impact defender and not better suited playing running back, where his top asset will be maximized. Interesting question.
Well, I don't see the deficiencies at all in tackling. He's one of the better tacklers, if you look at the football player in the draft. He physically comes up, closes, and is able to wrap up with physicality. I mean, the issue you have with this football player is he was moved around so much on the major college level. So people that stood out for Leonard Floyd and dynamic traits and saw a player be moved around a lot, not asked to do what he specializes in, and you saw the flashes when he was placed in a position where he could be successful, should have the same kind of mindset with this football player. Again, as Lauren said, you're projecting here, but ultimately, I think athletic traits, when playing football, show up and showcase themselves in understanding scheme. So if he's asked to cover the deep third and he's an athlete that can turn and flip hips with ease and is 220 pounds, about 6 foot, 5'11", 6 foot, and isn't afraid and will not back down from anybody, then I believe that player has not only the confidence to do it, but will end up being the alpha dog on the football team. You look at what transpired at the combine. I know I'm sick with this kind of stuff, but this is what I do. I watch the combine offensive linemen to see how they move, and I'm watching every drill just to see athletically if they could to play on the next level. I was able to come away from whatever draft Bakhtiari was in saying this football player is going to be a left tackle in the NFL. I said it the same thing with Derek Newton, who ended up going to the Texans. Just watching him in combine drills, just saying, I saw the tape, now I'm watching the combine. I was watching how they interacted with their peers. I watched Jabril Peppers at the combine, and I watched how he interacted with his peers, because all the tape told me was this is a dynamic athlete that could basically do anything on the football field if he's asked to do it. But then I watched him take over the linebacking unit and become the alpha dog of all those linebackers that are in the draft and are highly touted. This guy's leading them. Sign me up for that in the NFL, because this football player can play in a zone, guys. It's not hard. And Vic Fangio's scheme, it's 1-2. Understand who's your one and who's your two and match up accordingly. If you're an athlete that has the traits, I honestly will come back to this and we will remember what I felt about Jabril Peppers, because I'm not the only one. I'm not the only football coach or scout or whatever, draft Nick, that feels this way. But I will put my stamp down on the fact that I know if placed at safety and put on a corner, this guy won't back down to a Larry Fitzgerald athletically and physically. He'll end up taking him away. It's a matchup problem. If you watch him on corner and they try to run those flanker screens or split screens, he just runs through the receiver and makes the play in the backfield time and time again. I think the only issue I have with this football player is that he wasn't asked to play that position. But when you know, Jim Harbaugh will be one thing, and maybe he's a politician, but he's a damn great football coach. And he knew he had to use this football player in several different ways to get to where they wanted to go, and that was the national championship. And they came up a little short, but that was no fault of Jabril Peppers. Jabril Peppers was talked about as a Heisman type of football player because he could do it all. And when I feel as though, and I know I'm giving you the long answer, but this is a coach's, I get fired up with this football player, Aldo, because I know dynamic football players, and this kid is something special. Throw the fucking tape out, throw everything out the window, and then just look at the human being and that alpha male that you love so much in Adams that I see. And I see the same thing in a Peppers who's twice the athlete. And I feel as though finding the right home at safety will end up bringing out the best, just like you saw with Brian Urlacher. So this will have the role reversal where they move. Brian Urlacher was a free safety to linebacker, middle linebacker. I'm going to move Jabril Peppers, who played linebacker, corner, returner, running back, and play him at the safety position. And I really feel as though you'll see the reaps and the rewards later on.
Well, I appreciate the long answer. It's one of the reasons I love the medium of podcast, is because we don't talk in sound bites here. We allow people to express themselves, to give their very thoughtful responses to questions. Lauren, let me turn it over to you. We got a question from at Chi-Town Philly. It's on the Peppers topic. He asks, can Peppers play offense and defense in the NFL? And I think that is a great question, because you asked the question about whether, you know, the importance of you know, drafting Devin Hester to the Chicago Bears. But I think that it's even more important if you can get some offensive snaps from Jabril Peppers, because I really do believe that the kickoff is going to become extinct in the NFL. It's going to happen in 2 or 3 years. The player safety thing, we've seen rule changes announced today, most of them having to do with player safety. The signs are all pointing towards the kickoff becoming extinct. That's going to be, if my prediction is true, that's going to be something that Peppers offers, but that the NFL won't offer. but Peppers can do things on offense. Lauren, do you think Peppers can play offense and defense in the NFL?
I think he can, but you have to be careful about putting too much on a guy like that on his plate, because you want him to, because like with Michigan, you know, they had him do so much. They had him line up under center and run option. They had him run up, line up in the backfield. They had him play linebacker, cornerback, safety, slot cornerback, you know, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, deep safety. You want to sort of sit down with this kid and say, okay, you are so good at a lot of things. Just sit down and do this the best that you possibly can. And when you start to add him back in at other positions and moving him around and stuff, he's not able to really sit down and hone that craft and really work out every possible kink to be the best that he possibly can be as a safety or as a slot corner, however your team wants to use him. But at the same time, I think you can get away with giving him a package. You know, you're not going to build an offense around Jabril Peppers, but you look at a guy like Tyreek Hill. That's the comp that always comes up for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, obviously he's more, I mean, he's not a safety. He's not the Jabril Peppers on that side of the ball, but he comes in and he does his 10 to 15 plays a game. They find different ways to get him the ball in motion and in space and allow him to just work because he's such a dynamic player with the ball in his hands. And I think that's probably about the limit of what you're going to want to do with Jabril Peppers. I mean, I agree that I would have loved to – I would agree with Jose that I would have loved to see them use him more on offense at Michigan, and I would consider, you know, drafting him to play him at that position because he's just so good with the ball in his hands. But you don't want to force it with him. You know, like with Devin Hester where he – just wasn't able to really do offense in addition to special teams. It just seemed like it was a little bit too much for him mentally. If you got to let Jabril Peppers be Jabril Peppers on defense, and then if he's handling that and if he can do that at a high level and you feel like he can take on more and be more involved in the offense, then you put him there too, but only as a sort of a package player, a gimmick kind of thing.
Look at if you put him in the Wildcat at the goal line, how that affects the red zone. With a guy, an offensive coordinator, Dow Loggins, who struggles in the red zone. Now, all of a sudden, the read option becomes the ability to freeze that defensive end, make him think, and he pulls it and sprints past him. Also has a pitch guy with him. So the threat of giving to Jordan Howard, 240-pound animal in the backfield, with a Jabril Peppers, who's lightning quick in and out of cuts, how you're working, you're cooking with fire. And that's not the draft Knicks thought process in April. That's my coaching thought. I'm about winning tomorrow, Sunday, and about winning in the red zone. That's the only way you win now. So if you can do multiple things, I mean, where would this guy be ranked, guys, as a running back in this draft, you know? You look at him, I have him as the third-ranked safety. Mayock has him as the number one safety overall. Mel Kiper has number three safety, or whoever. Lauren has him, what do you have him, four at the safety position?
Yeah.
So ultimately, who's the best punt returner in this draft? To me, it's Jabril Peppers. So he's now ranking in the top five in several categories, then ultimately he's helping your football team. And I don't think people realize the amount of 53-man roster space that helps. You can not keep a third running back now because if you want to put in a package for Jabril Peppers, there's so many things this guy can do. I mean, he is a Swiss Army knife when it comes to the football field. And for me, sign me up for those types of guys, because if he's alpha male and he's Swiss Army knife, that means you're going to win a lot of football games with this guy on your roster.
Good stuff, guys. And we're getting a lot of good stuff on Twitter, too. A lot of excellent questions. Mike the Rookie at MDAROOKIE asked a question about Mike Glennon. What are your thoughts? And he's got a second part to the question, but let's stick to Mike Glennon. You guys did on your excellent YouTube series, Bears Hour Live, you did a tape study on Mike Glennon. Lauren, you gave an excellent wrap-up explanation of where he is at.
Mike Glennon has a strong arm capable of making all the throws, but he can get caught in the pocket under pressure at times because he lacks mobility. When he does escape and work on the move,
He does a great job of keeping his eyes downfield and finding open receivers, but as a young quarterback in Tampa Bay, he sometimes trusted his arm too much and was fooled by disguised coverages. The upside with Glennon is clearly there. It's all a matter of how much he has grown from 2 years on the bench.
What are your thoughts about Mike Glennon? How hopeful are you that he can be a number one starting quarterback in the NFL for the Bears?
I kind of go back and forth on this because he's another one of those. It's a projection with him. I mean, I like what we saw on tape, what we broke down in the video, and even just beyond from the games that I've watched from his 2013 and 2014. There are things to like, but at the same time, there are red flags, and you want to see, like Phil and I talked about, he's not necessarily all that more impressive than a Matt Barkley, and I think that speaks a lot to Matt Barkley. But they're similar guys in what they've shown you, and obviously. In the 3-13 season at the end of the year, Barkley threw up some interceptions and really sort of started falling apart. But how much of that comes back to the team he's on and the state of the team in a season that's lost versus, you know, a guy like Glennon being able to fight for something in obviously very, very different team situations around them. So, but they both, you know, they're big arm guys. They fire downfield, but you question even with both of them how well they handle pressure in their face and how well are they able to escape the pocket and keep their composure and fire downfield even when things are breaking down around them. And we showed a couple plays of it in his time from Tampa Bay, but it's not as though he was doing that every snap. And you look in Chicago, the way that offensive lines have been able to protect their quarterbacks in the last decade plus, he's not gonna have a lot of clean pockets to throw to, and he's not gonna have a 6'5" Vincent Jackson on the outside to throw to with Alshon Jeffrey out of town. Although, as Phil mentions to me almost every single day, literally for the last couple weeks, how is Vincent Jackson still a free agent and not a Chicago Bear, considering his connection with Mike Glennon? I totally agree there, but I'm not super confident in him to be the guy that's gonna lock down and really showcase this franchise quarterback of the future. I'm not sure how many people really are. I mean, I'm expecting the Bears to come away with one of the top four quarterbacks in this draft. You're looking kind of, I'm kind of expecting what we saw in Tampa Bay. He's a 200 to 250 yards a game, you know, close to a 2-to-1 interception ratio, but not, you know, not crazy either direction. He's not going to have any 4-touchdown games, but he's not going to have any 4-interception games. I think he's going to maybe take care of the ball a little bit better than Jay did as far as turning it over, but I don't think his completion percentage is necessarily going to be high. I just think he might have accuracy issues, but they won't be dangerous accuracy issues. They're just kind of going to be, you know, being slightly off target, and that's about what you're going to get. I mean, he's about the 20th highest paid quarterback in the NFL, somewhere in that range. And I think that's about what you can expect from a production standpoint. He's not going to be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL, but he's not going to give you confidence that I'm down 7 in the fourth quarter and this guy is going to single-handedly carry my team back. I think there's some give and some take there, but ultimately he's a lower-end starting quarterback and he kind of leaves you wanting a little bit more.
Mike Glennon is our starting quarterback. Mike Glennon is our starting quarterback. And Sanchez, I see a really good, solid number two quarterback. Quote Ryan Pace. Sorry, Aldo, go ahead.
No. I mean, I thought you were doing kind of like a Lovie Smith impersonation, you know, when he would say Rex Grossman is our quarterback.
I'm pretty sure Lovie did have, at one point, have a Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon.
Quote.
Yeah.
Can we find that and put that in the sound?
I will look for that, definitely. You know, I got to tell you a thought that I had about Glennon based on the tape that you guys put up on YouTube and your analysis and some other tape that I saw is that while, yeah, he's not Jay Cutler in terms of mobility. You know, in fact, Jay was really underrated in terms of his athleticism and what he could do with running with the football and so forth. And Glennon is not Jay in that respect. But I did see some really good footwork, and Lauren, you touched on this in your response just now, in that he is able to avoid the pocket and set and throw. Phil, did you see that too? And I don't want to compare him to Aaron Rodgers because he's leaps, you know, that there's a big gulf of a difference. But one of the things that makes Aaron Rodgers one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time is that escapability in the pocket. And I saw a little bit of that in Glennon in that he moved his feet and created a little bit more time. And again, he's not going to tuck the ball away and run for 20 yards, but he can create some time. Am I wrong in that assessment, Phil?
You know what, Aldo? I was very surprised how sneaky athletic this is. And I know that's draft Nick for white boy athleticism term, according to the new draft Twitter dictionary. But really, ultimately, it's true when it comes to Mike Glennon that he is sneaky athletic. His ability to manipulate the pocket was surprising to me, and he keeps his head down the football field looking to throw the football. Listen, this guy knows his strengths and his weaknesses and has 2 years to put himself on target to get to this point. The way he's handled himself with the Chicago media and the situation has been, it should be applauded because he's handled it really well. When you look at the tape, I can't express enough that I obviously was a little sour towards this decision based on having the contracted rights to Jay Cutler and ultimately could play a game of where you would want to go in the draft at a quarterback position. But here's where Ryan Pace is stating this is our starting quarterback. So when me and Lauren took to the table, you can go to YouTube at Bears Hour Live and subscribe to it, check out all the breakdowns that we do. We really delve into the good and the bad of Mike Glennon. And there was a lot of things to like about a tall, statuesque guy that really showcased more athleticism than both Lauren and I thought. So totally on board with you, Aldo. You like what you see. Now, this is the big projection is, what is this guy doing while he's gotten replaced by Josh McCown and Winston? How is he looking in the mirror at himself and about his career, knowing that the baton has been passed to him? He turned down a great contract to stay in Tampa for $8 million and hold a clipboard to come to Chicago for a few more million and really have his career at a crossroads, because here's where it's game time. This is make or break. You're going to be the starting quarterback of this team, and let's see who you are and how you handle this situation. And we're all going to see it from what we looked at from 2 years ago is really more surprising to me. And I hoped that Ryan Pace and company are onto something here. You hear the kind of quotes coming out there about other GMs saying, you know, they loved Mike Glennon. It also came out today, apparently, Ryan Pace was trying to trade for Mike Glennon last year. So they clearly have an infatuation with the guy. And now Chicago Bear fans are going to see who the real Ryan Pace and who the Mike Glennon is. And you know what? I'm going to sit back and watch number 8 take the football field and cheer the guy on, because ultimately he is the starting quarterback now. And there's a lot of things that you like about his game. And there's things that you hope and pray that after 2 years, you've got this opportunity and you've worked on your weaknesses.
Hope and pray, perfect way to put it, because that's how I feel. And I'm really hopeful, but I'm also going to be doing a lot of praying. I do think that Glennon does have a possibility of being a viable NFL starting quarterback. I look at Joe Flacco, and then I look at Mike Glennon and say, why not him? Why can't Mike Glennon take us to the Super Bowl like Joe Flacco did? I think he's got...
Can I answer that?
Yes, please.
The reason why Mike Glennon's not going to take the Bears to Super Bowl is because of the other 10 starters on offense and the 11 guys on defense. I mean, if you put Mike Glennon on a really good offense and good defense, he could absolutely take you to the Super Bowl. I mean, there's probably 25 plus quarterbacks in the NFL that if you build a good team around them, they can. I mean, Trent Dilfer took Brad Johnson took teams to the Super Bowl. It's, if this team had Alshon Jeffery still, if they invested more at the offensive tackle position, if they got another tight end, if they built this defense up and built this secondary up, I mean, you could build a nice roster around Mike Glennon. But the question becomes, is he a guy that elevates the level of play of players around him? And he hasn't proven that yet in his career, and I'm not sure he's ever going to. And I think that's what ultimately will hold him back, in my opinion.
I totally agree with that assessment. Totally agree.
That's going to be the chicken bone broken. which side are we getting? Are we getting the most meat, or are we getting the side with just bone? The Mike Glennon story. But he's 100% right, Ali. You know? Let me ask you both a question. Yeah, I asked this to Lauren this afternoon prior to coming on your great show. And if you're not following at bearsbarroom.com and going there and at Bears Barroom on Twitter and Aldo Gandia stuff, then you're really missing out. You do a great job there. I do stuff with you, Aldo, and we really appreciate the relationship here. But now, after I've kissed your ass a little bit.
Thank you. It's not exactly Jay Cutler's ass, but, you know.
A little more hairy, but a little less.
Much more hairy.
Jay's showing his ass. We got butt fumble. There you go. We're all together.
You know, it's funny. I saw a PFT commenter Photoshop a cigarette into Jay Cutler's butt crack.
Oh, that's classic.
Well, listen.
Go ahead.
Where exactly, you know, we went through last year 3-13, guys. Let's not pretty this pig up with some lipstick. We've all been very critical of John Fox. I think we're all in chorus thinking it should have been gone. At least at the end of this past year, they decided to stay the course. Okay? They carried over $20 million. They had the control of Alshon Jeffrey and Jay Cutler, and they let them both go. I want to know where they've improved. So when you look at this roster, and I know Lauren already answered this question earlier, so I'm going to let him go first to give you some time and really delve into, you know, my question, honestly, was looking at this in all honesty. No bias, no anger, just I'm looking forward to 2017 so far into free agency. And obviously, folks, we understand there is a asterisk at the bottom saying the draft hasn't come yet. But right now, where have they improved this roster from 2016?
The only position that really stands out, like we talked about, is the cornerback spot where they added Marcus Cooper and Prince Amukamara. But And then I'll throw in the safety position, too. It's just the one addition of Quinton Demps, and bringing back the rest of everybody else is just sort of your sort of base level there. But you look at the inside linebacker position, it's the same as it was last year. Maybe not a huge reason to upgrade there. Defensive line, you lose Cornelius Washington. You replace him with John Jenkins. That's the only change we've really seen there. And I mean, you and I are both big Cornelius Washington fans, and maybe Jenkins is a little bit more proven, but the upside with Cornelius Washington there, I'm not ready to say at any means that the defensive line position has improved, and I might argue that it's gotten worse. At the very least, that's status quo. Offensive line has remained exactly the same. Tight end position, you added Deion Sims. Okay, there's two, cornerback and tight end, but wide receiver, you lose Alshon Jeffrey, and you get Kendall Wright, you get Marcus Wheaton, you get is there a third one? I can't even think of besides Reuben Randall. But do they replace what you had with Alshon Jeffrey? And I'm not going to say that position got better. I'm not going to say they got worse, but I don't feel like that position got better. And then quarterback is such a huge drop-off that it's when you really sit and look at this whole roster, the spots of improvement to this point are not very encouraging.
Yeah, Phil, it's a great question. And you know, I agree with Lauren in terms of what improvements we've seen and where we're kind of still the same. I think that if we were to take the last roster that Phil Emery put together versus the roster that currently the Chicago Bears have, I think it would be a really close game. But I think that maybe Phil Emery's roster wins because of the offensive firepower. That team had Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Jay Cutler, Matt Forte, and we currently do not have that offensive firepower. Yes, this team now is much better defensively, but even with Prince Amukamara and whoever the other quarterback is, they're not going to guard Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey. It's just not going to happen. So that's what worries me about this team is that, and I've said it before, I'm like a broken record, is that this rebuilding effort has been like one of those old records where the music would skip, you know, and you're hearing the same thing. It's because we're just kind of stuck. The rebuilding effort has really just started now in year three of the Ryan Pace era. It should have started earlier. And if they were committed to Jay as part of that rebuilding effort, then they should have been committed to Jay as part of that rebuilding effort. And when he got injured last year, they should have maintained that commitment. You know, it really, really effing pisses me off that, you know, because I'm much older than you guys. I don't have that much time left to see the Bears in another Super Bowl. So, you know, I wanted to, you know, I'm like when Phil says, you know, I'm about winning. And I have a little bit, I think I have a little bit more patience than Phil, but I don't have that much more time than Phil. So this shit has got to happen. Now, you know, we get a really good question here from George at the George U, Y-O-U. And George asks, what do you see in Kevin White? And that answer is amplified. I mean, that question is amplified by Gene Hilmu at G-H-I-L-M-U. He asks, what's the status on Kevin White if he can step up? Now, we don't know what the status of Kevin White is. That's a closely guarded secret. Not even the Bears beat reporters know where he's at this point. But based on what we've seen him last year when he was just prior to getting injured, Phil, let me ask you, do you have hope that Kevin White can become a number one wide receiver and become, you know, that partner in crime for Mike Glennon?
This is the million-dollar question. I mean, me as a GM, I don't let Alshon walk out the door when I have control and the ability to control that player's whereabouts on my roster, as opposed to being a Philadelphia Eagle. So if you let him out the door and this guy is a complete bust, Aldo, then I don't know how the GM can get forward on the job. You follow me? Because you had an opportunity to cover a mistake by keeping a player in the fold. And then ultimately now you've let Alshon go. Now Kevin White becomes an intricate part. Unless they're drafting a receiver first in the top three, or they're trading back, getting more picks in the first round and getting a receiver. My boy Chris Godwin or something. I don't know if this GM could sell this and not take a quarterback or have Mike Glennon fail and continue to work as the Chicago Bears GM. So this really, he set up his chessboard completely on the edge. Or let's say he's put his Jenga puzzle together bad. And really, ultimately, Kevin White becomes a huge storyline heading into the 2017 season because, you know, he can sell Cam Meredith all you want, but you were drafting seventh overall, four spots from where you are. Now, you've not improved, might have gotten worse, and you're back even further up. And now you got to cover a mistake that you already made. That's not good. And you could blame injury or whatever, but we saw a receiver that wasn't polished and was a wild card to begin with. I liked the player coming out. You know, he was my number two receiver. Obviously, you know who my number one was, plays with the Las Vegas Raiders now.
Las Vegas.
So Kevin White, to me, looking at the tape from what I saw, I don't care what the smartest guy in the room, the mailman Shane Marsaw, says. We had this debate on here. I saw Cam Meredith as the best receiver coming next to Alshon coming out of the training camp. And I thought Kevin White was being force-fed the role. And it didn't sit well with me, just like the Jay Cutler not being the quarterback. So the head coach seems to have his hand in the cookie jar of the personnel decisions over Ryan Pace or with Ryan. I don't know how this is playing itself out, but it really isn't sitting well with me if that's the only move. Like, if you get a Vincent Jackson in here, then you've able to cover I believe, comfort level for Mike Glennon and the miss of a Kevin White, or you're going to have to draft a dynamic football player in this draft in the first three rounds that is going to be a receiver, because I'm with Lauren. These receivers that they signed are good players. Are they great? I think Cameron Meredith's your best receiver now on the roster. And
totally agree.
And now you're going to have a question mark about one of those players. And I only can hope that Kevin White is listening and understands, listen, you have an opportunity to really shut up a lot of people, including myself, and go out there, know your playbook inside and out, and really attack what it is you've done since you were a kid. And that's catching and dropping the football, the difference between winning and losing. That's your job. Go out there and play your ass off. That's hopefully what you get out of this football player, and he'll be a story of what an epic comeback story that would be for the Chicago Bears. But right now, I'm on the low end of believing in Kevin White.
Lauren, you got a message for Kevin White? He's listening. I know he is.
Watch the dreads? I don't know.
Shave your head. Come in renewed.
That's what Devin Hester did.
That's right.
He caught the ball that year.
Lauren, let me give you a softball question. And it comes from the smartest guy in the room. Actually, he's not in the room tonight. Shane Marsaw is taking care of some family business. We wish him lots of luck. He's getting a new home. Anyway, Shane asked this question. I think it's an excellent question. Why isn't offensive tackle talked about more as a need for the Bears when drafting in 2017? I have my own opinion on this. But first, Lauren, I want to hear yours.
It's my favorite question, Shane.
Thanks.
Well, I think the big thing here, it comes back to Ryan Pace and him, his evaluation of his own team. And I feel like he might be a little stubborn about Bobby Massey, feeling like he improved as the season finished and is just going to ride that and hope, you know, the way he played over the last six or so games where he was much more of a serviceable right tackle is going to carry over into the new future. And you've got a new offensive line coach in here that maybe can get more out of him. You feel like it, you know, you're putting your faith in your coaching staff to be able to get a more improved right tackle. And same kind of thing with Charles Leno. You know, he's not, maybe Pace feels like, again, showing improvement, continuing to grow. He's still a very, very young player. Off the top of my head, I'm pulling up here because he was the 2014 seventh round pick. He's still like 25 years old. So it's not as though he is has maximized his potential yet. And there are things to like about him. Maybe he's not quite there yet, but he had some good games this year and is growing at that left tackle position. So maybe Pace feels like it's not that big of a need. And when you've got a secondary with holes as wide as they are in Chicago, and you've got a wide receiver position that loses Alshon Jeffrey and a quarterback position that's wide open, offensive tackle kind of drops down the list more and more and more. And who knows, maybe we'll see them take someone early in the draft and solve what we've been really hoping for a while here. But I'm not getting my hopes up at that point. And, you know, it seems like the focus has kind of been on the interior, and you've got an extra guy there now with Ronis Grassu coming back from injury. So, of course, the Kyle Long to offensive tackle discussions will open up all offseason, and waiting for Ryan Pace to comment one way or another on that. But I'm sure soon enough we'll hear for sure there. But or even Cody Whitehair at offensive tackle. That's another discussion that has to happen.
There you go. There's where I'm thinking. And
I'm not sure they're going to pull the trigger there.
Yeah, I agree with Phil. And, in fact, I remember coming back from Bears training camp in Bourbonnais and calling into one of the radio talk shows and saying, why don't they have this rookie, Kyle Long, playing at left tackle if he's so athletic and he's so versatile? Why don't we throw him in there in his rookie season and move Jermaine Bushrod inside? And I forgot what answer I got, but, you know, that should have happened back then. And I agree with Phil that he is probably definitely the best offensive lineman we have and would be great at left tackle. The concern that I have is moving him on a season where he's coming off multiple surgeries. He's still in rehab. He probably won't be 100% at training camp. To throw that added burden on him of moving him to left tackle, which is on the opposite side of where he's always played. He's played right guard, right tackle. Now to throw him at left tackle just doesn't make sense, at least not this year. So, Phil, let me get your thoughts on this tackle position. What do you think?
Here we go again.
No, I'm with Shane. I think you got to get offensive tackles that can protect. When you're looking at a statuesque quarterback that, you know, is sneaky athletic, as we said, you need to be able to protect those edges. You know, you saw Brian Hoyer, who's kind of sneaky athletic too, had his forearm broken. You know, the quarterback position has been a fragile one in Chicago as well. Injury has came because of the incredible amount of abuse they've taken.
Great
at
point.
The position.
Great
and
point.
There's never been, can you guys hear me?
Yep, totally.
I'm sorry. There's never been a investment in the position with a dynamic athlete. Now, I look at this draft, aside from my stance, I'm okay with moving, for the record, Kyle Long to right tackle at this point. I'm concerned about the edges being protected. If that's where you want to move him, then do that and have Whitehair and Leno battle it out left tackle. Let the five best players play. I love the re-signing of Kush. I feel as though he is a starting quality offensive guard. And I feel as though if you have sitting in there, you can manipulate those five and put them in the best position. I've quoted Tom Coughlin several times on Twitter in saying, you put players where they don't want to succeed to ultimately get them to be successful. And I'm paraphrasing. They might not like it, but ultimately they end up becoming Hall of Famers, essentially. From where I see Kyle Long, he's got everything you've ever wanted in an offensive tackle and more. He has that attitude, that look in his eye that he is going to go one-on-one with someone and beat the shit out of them for an hour of 60 minutes of football. And when you looked at the tape in 2015, when he played, he was asked to play right tackle 2 weeks before the season started. And then 2 weeks, first week, he's lining up against Clay Matthews with a freaking cast on his hair. And then week four, he's shutting out Justin Houston. And week three, Houston. And then week four, he's shutting out Khalil Mack. I mean, that should have counted for something. I think where they failed, Aldo, is now they moved him back to guard because Kyle wanted to play guard, whoever. That's why that coach is gone, I believe. But ultimately, it made an error there. But looking at this draft, I feel as though there's guys in this draft, especially a guy that's being labeled as an offensive guard. But really, I see him as a left tackle, a difference maker at left tackle, an upgrade to Charles Leno, and that's Forrest Lamp. Just see everything I want in a left tackle, athleticism, toughness, the ability to run block, but also have that quick twitch ability to get back in your kick slide and protect the blind side of a quarterback. This young man is something special on tape. I know he played at a smaller school, but it's been talked about tirelessly. When you look at him against Jonathan Allen and the Alabama defense that is so highly touted, not only did he play well, he dominated them. And individually matched up with them and was able to really showcase who he is as a football player. Then he was down at the Senior Bowl and unfortunately got hurt, which limited the amounts of reps that fans and people would be able to see, or ultimately they'd be talking about him as a top 10 pick. That's how highly I think of that football player. So he is in my top 20 football players off the top of my head. I can't remember where he's listed, but this is a football player that can help the Chicago Bears. And if he's sliding down the draft board and you drafted who you drafted, I don't want to speculate, in round one at three, and then you want to come back up and and really solidify this position that's been overlooked and neglected, that would be a home run in my mind. It's not a sexy pick, and thus Bear fans don't like to talk offensive linemen, but really, they're the reason why you win and lose football games half the time.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been following this team since, like I've said before, since the late 60s, and at a certain point, Jim Finks was the guy in charge of building the Chicago Bears, and the one thing that I learned from him, and it's been true, it was true then, and it's still true today, you draft offensive and defensive linemen. He said that's how you build a football team, and Jim Finks, one of the great football executives in the history of the NFL, he was totally right. Lauren, before we go, Matthew Balsley, who has been a guest on a Bears Barroom, you interviewed him, as a matter of fact. He's got a number of really good questions here. We don't have time to go through all of them. I'm just going to pick one. He wants to know about some of the free agent acquisitions that the Bears have signed. Are any of them graded highly in the special teams area? Do you know the answer to that? And if not, can you give us any information at all on Tom Compton? Another question that Matthew asked about how he was ranked on Pro Football Focus and anything that you may have seen on tape about him.
Yeah, I was just going to pull up the list of free agents off the top of my head because I remember one of them standing out as a guy that can contribute a lot of free agents on special teams. I know Prince Amukamara, I believe.
Demps used to return kicks.
Yeah, Mukamara was, a four-phase guy in Jacksonville off the top of my head. I don't remember for
sure.
Yeah,
he was on the coverage units, and you have Wheaton returned kicks.
Yeah, I think Deion Sims does the kickoff unit. There's not a lot of special teams from these guys, though. I mean, at the end of the day, those are your Chris Prusinski signings, your Benny Cunninghams. Those are the sort of the bottom end guys that come in and handle that. But as far as Tom Compton in particular, he hasn't played that much really in the last couple of years. There's not a lot to even base off of for him. I mean, he's just kind of a guy, a swing tackle guy that came in for some snaps for Atlanta and didn't really do much, didn't get, you know, absolutely trashed out there, but didn't show a lot to say he should be starting someday in the NFL. He's sort of just one of those big white dudes that gets thrown on at the offensive tackle position. He can move a little bit, you know, more than a guy that you would snag at guard. But again, he's not going to be out there handling the best speed rushers or absorbing a lot of powerful bull rushers. He played 82 snaps last year. He played 236 in the year before. I mean, these are really just specific situations, and he's not really letting it up. He's not anything to get super excited about. I kind of see him in the same light as a guy like Mike Adams from last year, where, you know, maybe there's something there. You're taking a chance on a swing tackle kind of guy, but if you have to rely on him at any point in the season for any significant role, you're in big trouble.
You know, in today's NFL, more than ever, it's about coaching and developing these players because there's just so much movement, because there's just so much being asked of players in terms of versatility and to play this position, move over to that position and so forth. I mean, in the old days, when the Bears practiced at Rensselaer, Indiana, and they had two-a-days in that heat, every player played the same position for those two-a-days. Now they just have one practice, and they've got the player moving around all sorts of different positions. To me, it's part of the reason that the quality of NFL football has deteriorated over the last few years because of the CBA and because of coaches wanting to have everybody so versatile and moving players here and there and not deciding where their starting position is. This is a rant for another day, but I want to end the show with having Phil tease the next Bears Barroom doctor's office video that's going to be posted this week. Phil, you took a look at Akeem Hicks. What did you find in that player? And then I want to ask Lauren, how quickly should we extend this guy's contract? Because I just finished looking at the tape that you provided, and boy, oh boy, does he look like a monster and on those clips that you provided us.
Well, before I do that, Aldo, we got a bit of a breaking news.
Oh.
And it might have been broken earlier, but Kyle Fuller is now a safety.
Whoa.
In Chicago.
Not fully.
It's not fully?
Fully.
I saw Lauren Cox tweet. Finally.
So the quotes from Ryan Pace said that they asked DeAndre Hall to play safety, and safety could be an option for Kyle Fuller, but he's going to get a chance to compete at cornerback first.
Well, I've been asking this franchise to move this guy to free safety since he was drafted, because I believe that some of the things that we talk about in this safety class, this great safety class, this kid has. And I want to say this is his way to save his career in Chicago, because ultimately, if he gets cut or waived, he'll be in New England starting at safety and really making a difference for them. So make your choice now and make it smart, Mr. Pace, and just put your foot down that he's a safety, because that would help this football team significantly.
Yeah,
sorry, Aldo.
No, we'll get back to your response on the question I asked you, but just looking at BearsWire.com, written by Lauren Cox, he writes that at the NFL League's meetings in Arizona, Pace spoke to the media and revealed that the team has been talking to DeAndre Hall about playing safety. Now, my question is, did they talk to him before he was arrested or after he was arrested? And that
he was
also
probably drunk at the bar, and he's like, yeah, I'll play
safety. I'll play wherever. You want me to play quarterback? Sure.
I just want to keep my job at this point.
Yeah, really.
That's a really good move for that kid, too, yes, because of his length and his ability to take away the football. It's another thing that I know me and Jose Cotto have been talking about off the air throughout the offseason, actually, going into the free agency, as well as Lauren and myself, just talking about the best thing for this player, and DeAndre Hall, that is, would be a move to safety.
And Hall was asked about that at the NFL Combine a year ago, and he said that his preference was to play cornerback, but that he would do whatever any NFL team that drafted him requested of him. So that was already something that was being talked about after he finished his college career at Northern Iowa. And so it could happen with the Chicago Bears. I agree with you, Phil. This would be an excellent move.
So, yeah, Aldo, I looked at Akeem Hicks for the doctor's office at bearsbarroom.com. If you haven't checked it out, I've done Cam Meredith. I'm going to keep putting a spotlight on Chicago Bears players already on the roster and whether or not where their fit is, where their future is. Should we extend them? Are they what we think they are? And the microscope and the stethoscope had to come out to check the heartbeat of the defensive line. And what I found in Akeem Hicks for Bears Barroom in the doctor's office was not only an impressive football player who at 6'5", 250, 300 and some odd pounds. What is he weighing in at now, Lauren? About 330?
Something like that.
335, we'll call it. This guy is an athlete who can move and continue to ascend as a football player on the football field. And when you're looking at that five technique and you need somebody to deliver the blow, maintain a flat back, and get to the pass rushing position, to create an edge and create double teams and slip through them and get after the quarterback, Akeem Hicks was not only stellar, he was dynamic. And really, on a bad season, this is one bright spot that you really came away with. And when you really look at the tape, not only in his pass rush, but in a lot of his run fits and his ability to separate, disengage, deliver the blow, and get to the running back. I mean, his run stuffing skills were tremendous as well. And I think if you're a Bears fan, you're going to love this series. You're going to love the microscope on Akeem Hicks, because I know I got fired up in watching the man and putting it all together at Bears Barroom. Has been nothing but fun, and what an outstanding player. And I won't take away Lauren's answer to this question, but I think you know where I stand on what we should do with this football player.
Lauren, yeah, I do want to get your thoughts on this because it is a tricky situation about extending a player's contract. You almost have to do it at the right time, which is you don't want to wait too long and let that player start to get interested about going into the free agent market to see what his value is and see and get into a bidding war. And you also, you know, want to ensure that you sign him and don't lose them, you know. So it's a tricky situation. What are your thoughts about the Bears extending Akeem Hicks?
Yeah, you know, you almost would like to have seen more than one season before you extend him, and maybe they'll wait and see exactly how he does this season, because obviously it was probably the best year of his career, and it seems to be the perfect fit for him. He's really thriving in the system, but you never know if it was just sort of a one-year thing where the fit just seemed right. And I mean, obviously he dominated on tape. There's no questioning what he did. It's just a matter of how confident you are in him to be able to do it again. And at least the encouraging thing is that injuries have never really been a major issue in his career. He's never missed more than two games in a season. And you kind of know you're going to get a consistent player who's out there every rep, and his effort seems to be pretty high. So I'm not concerned overly as far as, you know, the risk involved with paying a guy like this, because he's 27 years old. I think he turns 28 during the season, and he's just kind of entering the prime of his career. He seems to have found the fit that's perfect for him. You know, he bounced around in New England and New Orleans where he was drafted, and it wasn't quite exactly what his skill set was best applied to, but it seems like all things are looking great in Chicago, and there's no reason to be super apprehensive in signing him. It's just going to come down to money at the next stage, and he's playing on $5 million a year this year. Obviously, I think you're going to have to step that up quite a bit, but the question becomes how much he feels like his market's going to be. I mean, you look at a guy like Jabal Sheard from the Colts is making $8.5 million. Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals is at 7.5. Robert Ayers in Tampa Bay is at 6.5. I mean, he's starting to get up in this caliber of player, and how much money are you going to spend on him? You know, Jarrell Casey's up at that $9 million number. It comes down to where his value is, and I wonder if the Bears are going to be willing to pay him, or if it's going to be a situation like Alshon where they let him test the market and ultimately let him walk.
Lauren, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Cox Sports One. That's COX Sports One.
And Phil, where can people find you?
That's at Full Phil O. FULPHILO on Twitter.
And make sure you are also following at Bears Hour Live on Twitter, and also subscribing to their podcast and following them, subscribing to their YouTube channel, because you are going to get some sensational analysis on Bears, prospective Bears, all sorts of great stuff that you just won't find anywhere else. Guys, we've been talking for over an hour, and I got to tell you, back in the days of the infancy of Chicago TV, even before I was born, there used to be a TV show that was hosted by a guy named Irv Kupcinet. Now, Irv played for the Chicago Bears. I think it was in the 1940s. He was an NFL referee in the 50s, and then he turned into a gossip columnist, a very famous gossip columnist here in the Chicago area. Well, he hosted a TV show on Saturday night that began at midnight and would not end until he said, okay, let's end the show. So sometimes they went an hour, sometimes they went 2 hours, sometimes they went 2.5 hours. The idea was is that they just talked until they felt the conversation should be over. And that's how I feel when I'm talking to you guys. I want to talk forever because you guys just bring it. The information, informed opinions, well-researched facts, you guys bring it. And when we got the whole group together with Jose Cotto and Shane Marsaw, to me, it's must listen to podcasting. But again, I encourage all of our listeners to be following Lauren and Phil on their new endeavor, Bears Hour Live. They are kicking ass. Guys, thanks very much for being on the show.
Hey, a little plug. We got a crossbreed Sunday. And what I mean by that is none other than Dos Pesos Cotto is going to be joining Bears Hour Live, taking phone calls this Sunday, breaking down the defensive backs, cornerbacks rather, in the draft, and tight ends we're going to go into. So It's going to be a fun show. Jose is going to join us. So those Jose Team Codo fans, Team Taco.
It's raining tacos from out of the sky. Tacos, no need to ask why.
Call in and get Jose's opinion.
That's
and
good.
It should be fun, fiery debates with me and Jose. That's alive. Right.
You won't be able to bleep any of Jose's comments out, Lauren. So because it's live, so you might want to warn your listeners.
Ready?
Yeah, warn your listeners before the show. Guys, thanks very much. And for all our listeners, thank you for listening. And as always, if you drink, drink responsibly and always bear down.
Bear down.
Yeah, I can do that legally now.
What's that?
Yes.
Oh, you're Lauren. 21 now?
Yeah. Holy shit. I thought you were like 24.
Well, let me tell you.
I took a big drink of water right as you started saying that. I tried really hard not to spit it up.
Lauren, when I see you next, I'm going to bring a case of Arrogant Bastard Ale, which is what I've been drinking tonight. This stuff will grow some hair on your balls.
When I see you next, I'm going to bring... I went...
there's a letdown. Letdown of epic proportions. And I mean epic proportions. 32-23.
If I lost you, would I cry? Oh, how I love you, baby. Baby, baby, baby. When you were a young boy, did you have a puppy? Follow you around. Well, I'm gonna be as faithful as that puppy.